At Parker, our purpose is simple. We want to make the world a better place. By working more efficiently, by using more sustainable practices, by developing better technologies, we keep moving forward. With each new idea, innovation, and partnership, we're one step closer to fulfilling our purpose every single day. To find out more, visit parker.com/purpose. Parker, engineering your success.
This is the story of the one. As head of maintenance at a concert hall, he knows the show must always go on. That's why he works behind the scenes, ensuring every light is working, the HVAC is humming, and his facility shines. With Grainger's supplies and solutions for every challenge he faces, plus 24/7 customer support, his venue never misses a beat. Call quickgrainger.com or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
Accelerating your fandom, this is Flash TV Talk.
Welcome to Flash TV Talk, the fan podcast dedicated to news, reviews, and more for the hit CW show, The Flash. I'm Beau.
And I'm Bell.
Bell! Man, how you doing tonight?
I'm on fire.
Yeah, you are. What, like in a like symbolic way, or like you melting to a crisp type kind of way?
I don't know. I was just trying to tie something into the episode.
No, I mean, I appreciate the desire to do that, but yeah, man.
No, I'm good. I'm fine. Everything is golden.
Would you say that this episode was on fire?
Most certainly.
Yes. I just realized that when the bartender showed up and you know, when they found the body, we could have been like, this girl is on fire. That's so inappropriate.
Too soon. Way too soon.
Like, not even close to being soon enough. Belle, of course, this is the Flash TV Talk podcast, rather the TV Talk podcast. We are very excited to get back to our roots. We talk about The Flash this week. We got a lot of great TV coming up, though. I feel like it needs to be acknowledged that, man, we've got this Obi-Wan show here on the horizon. We've got Moon Knight here on the horizon. And man, I'm curious, before we dive into The Flash, which is about to go down, I'm curious as to your thoughts about this Halo series. Is this like, are we doing this? Are we not doing this? It's on like a Paramount streaming service, which I certainly don't have a subscription for, but I'm curious as to your thoughts.
I watched the first episode last night, actually.
And just kind of a quick, is it a thumbs up, a thumbs down? I'll wait and see. What are you thinking?
I am curious because it is nothing like the story from the game.
Interesting.
So I'm kind of curious as to where they're going to go with it. It seems really neat. Like it's got all that Halo-y kind of stuff that, you know, I feel like people who have played the games and enjoy the story will appreciate. But it is completely different than the video game story.
Okay. All right. Well, I mean, like that's fine. I think I can go into it with an open mind. My whole thing though is like of the entire Halo franchise, my favorite character is Dr. Halsey. And so as long as they get Dr. Halsey right, I don't mind them changing up Master Chief. I actually, you know, I'm not that personally tied to his story one way or the other. But Halsey is like such a cool character, like one of my favorite characters in all of video games and sci-fi. And so as long as I get Halsey right, then I'm down. So maybe we'll be covering that in the future.
Yeah, she's interesting. I honestly don't remember too much about her from like I read Halo Fall of Reach and played all the games and stuff, but she seems like an interesting character.
Okay, cool. Well, like I said, we'll be looking at that in the future, but for now, man, we've got an episode of The Flash to dive into. Are you ready for it?
Let's do it.
All right, man, let's jump into The Rundown. Episode 8 of Season 8, The Fire Next Time, directed by David McWhirter and story by
Joshua V. Gilbert.
Bell, what happened to this episode?
Well, the recently paroled Jocko Birch is arrested for the incineration of O'Shaughnessy's manager, Stan Mullen, who he was arguing with the night prior. He professes his innocence and desire to be there for his son, Harold. With there being no hard evidence against Jocko, and with it being Henry Allen's birthday, Barry becomes determined to convince his team of Jocko's innocence. Flash and Frost find bartender Donna Winters incinerated, however Chester discovers that the methods of burning do not match Jocko's abilities. Flash and Frost stop Jocko from kidnapping Harold from social services, and they work together to stop a lava channel from erupting. At CCC Media, Iris has Allegra interview a social media influencer, Rosie Levin, with her constituent, Taylor Downs, but Allegra shirks the interview to pursue a story involving ex-con Lydia Sanchez. Iris agrees to publish both stories, and Allegra tries to apologize to Taylor, but she refuses to listen. That night, Yako and Harold reunite while Joe's family celebrates Henry's birthday. Later, Team Flash focuses their efforts on finding the real killer.
Dun, dun, dun. Doo-loo-loo-loo-loo. All right, man. This episode, I feel like, perfectly showcases what I was kind of talking about last week, which is the importance of human characters. Okay? Like, you know, lived experience is kind of the theme that, you know, connects all of the various stories here, but you have kind of a super meta-human, a kind of comic booky fantastical element of that story, but then you also have a very human side of that story as well. And one of the challenges I think the show has continued to face is that when everybody's a meta, when everybody's been given kind of a power to kind of get us out of a thing one season that you're kind of stuck with ongoing, you have to kind of depower a lot of people in order to get to that human story. And so, for example, Cecile in this episode, you know, all of a sudden is kind of like, oh, it'd be unethical for me to use my powers. And most of us in the audience are like, since when? And the answer to that is since the story called for it. And that's one of those things where it's a CW show. We kind of allow that to happen. But man, oh man, do I wish there could be a Scarlet Witch moment where we hear no more metas that wipes out the majority of the meta characters, not wipes them out, but wipes out their abilities and brings us more human characters back onto the show, so that we can kind of have these ideas of stories that are told from a superheroic standpoint and from a human standpoint, from a godlike, you know, from kind of that godlike level to that mortal type level, like where those kind of, you know, the yin and the yang that could potentially exist in a lot of stories, it's here. And I think this episode actually did a pretty good job of that, but it still had to do that waltz of kind of stepping around other people's powers in order to make it happen. So that's kind of like my grand thesis for overall how I feel about this episode before we dive into the various characters and stories at play. But it's just been very heavy on my mind going into the season. I don't know. What overall, man, looking at this episode, what were your thoughts?
Well, I want to say that I'm glad that they did the thing that they did with Cecile, because that was kind of a thing where, you know, I want to say, and correct me if I'm wrong, I know there were some instances where she did decide to use her powers. I know Top was one instance where she used her powers in a way to like gain information. I think it was kind of a different context. I think in this situation, I think she's correct, and I think that was the right move, and I think that's a good way to do that going forward. When we have her in a human style story, she needs to, you know, stick with the law and stuff like that. And I want to say previously, it's been involuntary when she would get that information about like, oh, this guy's innocent, because she didn't have control over her powers. Now that she has that control, I think, you know, her directive is to use it when it's applicable and not when it's not. And so I like that with them going forward. And it's also interesting because they've essentially depowered Allegra by putting her in Central City, Central City Citizen Media.
The CCC, the C3, my friend.
Yeah, the C3 Media. Because, like, what instances when she's giving interviews is she going to need her power set? And so that's kind of neat. You know, we don't necessarily have to have them depowered. It's just they're in situations where they don't need to use their powers, and so or feel ethical constraints from using their powers, and so I think that's fine. Like I agree with you that it's nice that we're not having the powers kind of like override those human sort of stories. I don't necessarily think we need a like No More Mutants kind of thing. We sort of did that with The Cure, and you know how I feel about The Cure.
Well, I think you want to cure her, Charles. Yeah, no. No, yeah. No. I'm aware. And you know how I felt about The Cure storyline as well. It's just kind of one of those things that the ethical question. Well, you know what? And actually, that's going to end up coming into kind of later on in our discussion here with.
I wasn't talking about The Cure storyline. I was talking about Robert Smith and The Cure.
Oh.
Sorry. I didn't mean to confuse you.
I was totally confused there.
No, I kid. But yeah. Anyway.
Well, I gotta say, man, the heart of the superheroic side of things was very much on full display. We're kind of introduced to this concept that today, for whatever reason, is a very emotionally heavy day for Barry. And of course, as the episode plays out, we see that in some form or fashion, it's tied to his father. And ultimately, this was his father's birthday. He's reflecting throughout the episode on kind of the traumatic experiences he had as a child, seeing his father carried away from him. And then that goes directly into the case that he's following with Jack Black. I mean, Jacob Birch, who shows up. Actually, you know what? I don't have a Jack Black. You've got a Jack Black. Don't you have a Jack Black?
No, I've been one time in Vegas, some really drunk lady thought I was Jack Black. That was back when I had longer hair. And she was like, "Oh my God, Jack Black, can I have a picture?" I'm like, "Okay." And so, you know, she took a picture and I was like, "All right, should I feel bad about that? Like, is that an insult or is that a..."
Man, did I ever tell you about the time that I tried to get into a club in New York trying to convince them I was Sean Astin?
Oh my God.
Did I never tell you about that? I was, I was visiting my brother and, or maybe it wasn't a club. Maybe it was just like a bar or something. I can't remember exactly what it was, but they had some sort of situation going on where, they weren't letting us in. And so we're walking away and then I kind of do a double back. I'm like, I was like, "Hey, do you know who I am?" And he kind of gave me a look and I was like, "Have you ever seen Lord of the Rings?" And the bouncer kind of gave me this, "Dude, shut up and get out of here" look. Yeah, it didn't work very well.
Yeah, yeah.
But people have mistaken me for Sean Astin before. I am a very short man.
That is true. But is Sean Astin actually short or is he just, that was just all CG and stuff?
I don't know. Anyway, point is, you and I are not celebrities, nor should we ever be mistaken for celebrities. But no, here, we do have Jacob Birch, who could be mistaken for Jack Black in this episode, who has this kind of contentious relationship with his son, who is a Hunter Camp Jr.
And I would argue that Yako is Hunter Camp Sr.
Yeah, well, there you go.
I mean, they both have cool jackets.
Yeah, they both like very, music. Very cool. They do? Yeah. And this is, of course, a return of a character that we've seen before, as well as a location that we've seen before in O'Shaughnessy. What's it called?
O'Shaughnessy's.
O'Shaughnessy's. I thought it was O'Shaughnessy's.
Did you really?
Yes.
O'Shaughnessy's.
Hey, that word is very, very difficult for a dyslexic to say.
I'm just gonna imagine.
You know, throughout the episode, they do a really good job of pointing out, like, they kind of play a little bit with us as an audience because we're meant to kind of see Yako as you. Is it Yako or Jaco?
I'm pronouncing it Yako because of the famous bassist Yako Pastorius, which is spelled the same way.
I see. Okay. Well, we're kind of led to believe early on that Birch is innocent, but then when we see him break out and go after the manager, the girl that worked there, and then she shows up dead. It's kind of a twist. All of a sudden, it seems like, okay, well, maybe he actually might be the killer. I actually thought the way in which they toyed with us as an audience and then also put this up against Barry's experience of seeing his father carted away on a crime he didn't commit, when all evidence, like no rational person would look at the case and say that Henry Allen was innocent. There's just because of what we knew at the time. And so this concept of taking that from Barry's experience, applying it to Birch's present reality, and then us as an audience watching without really having all the facts, still, by the way, not having facts by the end of the episode, I thought was done really well. It actually felt like a legitimate mystery throughout the entire episode to me.
Yeah, that was really cool. So I had my suspicions at the beginning because of the way that Stan Mullen, the manager, was killed, because when we see him use his powers, when we see Yako use his powers later in the episode, he's like, you know, lighting himself on fire, and I'm assuming throwing fireballs. And like Barry had mentioned, you know, like the corpse was charred, but like nothing else around it was. And right. Stan Mullen touched like a bar stool and his hand caught on fire and the beer was like boiling and stuff like that. And so it didn't seem to match. And then when he goes and he sees the waitress who is there, and like he gets really mad and you see him like, you know, start to flame up and whatnot, we don't see anything that happens from there. The next thing we know is he's just on the run. And so I still felt like there's something going on here. I know I felt like they're showing us this scene to sort of make us think that, you know, perhaps he could actually be guilty, but it still felt different, like, because it was, you know, just going off what we were seeing in the episode, what Barry, you know, in his little, you know, CSI analysis was saying, it was like, you know, he absorbs the heat, and it seems like that other entity or whatever it was projecting heat onto things, right?
Yeah.
And they said it was like a nuclear fusion kind of thing versus like, you know, just fire. And so it was interesting, and it's kind of nice that they didn't give us this sort of moment where we see Yako get mad, and then all of a sudden the waitress bursts into flames, and he's like, "Oh crap! Like, what happened?"
Right.
Because it adds more to that mystery, which is really cool. It's kind of nice to have, you know, subgenres within a superhero show.
Oh, and absolutely! Yeah,
I love it when they do that. And so we got kind of a little mystery here, and we have a mystery going on for the rest of the season. Who is this fire meta guy? So that's pretty cool.
Yeah. And we don't know if this is going to be a season long plot line. It might just be to the next episode. It might be a little bit longer, but to some extent, I kind of like that. I like the amount of unknown that they toyed around with during the episode and also left us with at the end of the episode. Now, like I said, Bell, a lot of the connected tissue here between what is our kind of superhero story and our human story is the notion that lived experience is an invaluable tool when assessing kind of the world around us, right? So we've got Allegra. She's been kind of put on assignment. She has to interview this influencer. She's also dealing with a subordinate who is insubordinate on top of that. You know, she goes into this interview and she kind of does a bad job. She doesn't manage her person. She kind of phones in the interview, and then all of a sudden she recognizes somebody that she knew from prison. And finds in her story and in her frustration the exact story that she felt was the one that she needed to be working on. And so she abandons her employee, does not provide any kind of managerial support, tells a, you know, granted a better story, but not the story that she was sent out after. And, you know, while it does get posted, Allegra has to learn a valuable lesson that, you know what? Yes, you can tell those stories. That's an important thing to do. And that's, you know, that's a critical, you know, job that the citizen is portraying. But also, you are part of a system in the citizen in and of itself. And you're supposed to be training up this next generation or your employees, rather, who are going to be telling these stories. And you might not like the story they're telling now. You might not always like every single story that you're going to be telling, but you got to kind of bring them up. You don't want the junior reporter on some of the heavier stories. Yeah, the junior reporter is going to be telling the story of the little influencer. But you don't know. Maybe, Belle, that influencer is somebody who's important. Maybe that influencer is an ancestor of Booster Gold. Maybe that influencer is somebody who, if we had been following her story, we'd see yet another setup for Booster Gold coming to the Flash.
That would be interesting.
Because guess what?
Rose Levin was an ancestor of Booster Gold.
Yes, she was. Yes.
I had no idea. Like that, I just learned that from reading the show notes, but that's interesting.
It is very possible that was just a little Easter egg of kind of pulling somebody around. I mean, it should be made note too that Donna Winters, who was the girl that was on fire earlier in the episode, was actually Tim Drake's stepmom. So
Not anymore, she ain't.
Yeah, as much as I don't think that's going to be happening in this timeline anytime soon, but yeah. So sometimes they just kind of pull random names and for these side characters. But given the fact that we got a Booster Gold tease early on, and now we've got potentially another little Booster Gold tease in this episode that we kind of sidestepped, I'm curious if there might be some connection there.
Yeah, that's interesting. But as far as like Allegra's behavior goes, I think to quote the dude would be applicable here. No, Walter, you're not wrong. You're just an a-hole. Because that's basically what Allegra was. It's like she was so focused on her story. And yes, I mean, she was right. It was a better story. But like you said, you know, she had a directive to do the other story. And it's really neat to see like Boss Iris come in there and be like, nah, like, you're part of this organization. Your skills would have helped her article be better. And now you have to patch up this relationship and you have put a severe breach of trust in there, and it's going to be hard to do that. And so, yeah, it's interesting. You know, it's we're not dealing with metahumans. We're dealing with newspapers and reporting and stuff like that, but it's still an interesting situation to kind of watch develop. So, yeah, well, I didn't think I'd be saying this, but you know, I'm kind of interested to see where it goes.
Well, and here's the thing. This is why Allegra's not an a-hole, because she does, like, she eats crow. She recognizes what she did wrong, and she goes to her employee. The fact of the matter is the employee's kind of an a-hole, because Allegra, as you mentioned, is not wrong. Like, the employee did go over her head, which the employee, like, and honestly, Iris probably should have sent the employee back to Allegra instead of kind of disrupting the chain of command. Like, I feel like Allegra did get kind of set up for failure while she was also setting up her employee for failure in that. But irregardless, it sets up the storyline and it works out okay. So Allegra does go to her employee and she does say, "Hey, you know what? I messed up here." But then the employee is like, "I'm the a-hole now.
I'm going to destroy you." And it's like, okay. like why would you say that to your boss? Like, that's like a write-up right there. I'd be like, okay, yeah, not happening.
Yeah, I was like, I feel as though, like, if Allegra was on a little bit better standing in her position, which, you know, currently she just got reprimanded, so she's not quite in the, like, the strong, like, stance she could to just fire this person. It's kind of it was actually a really well-written story, like, with actual human characters. And I mean that not just from the non-meta aspect, as, you know, as is noted, Allegra is a metahuman, but she's put in a very human scenario. And we see growth. We see learning. We see failure. We see strengths. Like, this is what I think can work really, really well when we have this combination of this fantastical element of Killer Frost and the Flash and, you know, Yako, "I can destroy the city when I get mad, but somehow it's cool. Just let me take care of this kid." We'll talk about that in a second. Anyway, point is, you got, like, this big, like, over the top, you know, superhero drama, but then you also have these kind of human stories, and then you have these kind of emotional ties or these kind of thematic ties of, you know, that lived experience and how that plays in. And what I think could really work well is if they leaned even further into this. You know, one of the things that we saw last season was with multiple shows that are like cop dramas and that sort of thing, trying to kind of reconcile with this, like, okay, maybe perhaps in our fiction, we have over-lionized the police when we know that there is, you know, there's good cops and we also know that there's corrupt cops. And so how do we do a better job of showcasing that as opposed to pretending like everything's all hunky-dory? The Flash struggled with this last season as well. We saw that entire arc with Joe ultimately leaving the police force, but then it kind of was like, okay, well, but perhaps maybe there's, you know, an avenue for reform or an avenue for showcasing some sort of narrative there. Like, how do we call out the bad and challenge it with the good, as opposed to pretending that the bad is not there and that it's all good? And so I think what we saw in this episode is recognizing kind of like the failures in the justice system, albeit in kind of, you know, the DC Comics world and in the Arrowverse. But then also challenging that and looking further into it. How do we get, you know, rather than like, oh, this person tried to destroy the city, but go now they're working, you know, like by the end of it, the Flash is like, "I just talked to the mayor who's going to finance your soup kitchen project." It's like, okay, that's a little okay. Like, okay. Or, like, what if it's like this person who has been wrongfully committed and we use super science to find the actual, you know, the actual killer. And so, you know, and leave it as kind of this mystery so that we kind of acknowledge, no, there are actual villains that we need to stop, but there are actual, you know, folks in this who are victims themselves who are being treated as villains. I loved the complexity of this episode, despite it still being a very CW kind of, you know, over the top drama and all that kind of good stuff. I mean, for what The Flash is, I think that's the way in which these stories can be approached best. And that happens even better when we have this marriage of superhuman and very human. And so kudos to this episode, I say, for the way in which it handled a lot of the subject matter and its characters, and putting especially like Cecile and Allegra in particular into very human type roles, and having Barry, its most super of superhumans, be very driven by his human emotions. Hats off. Well done.
Yeah. You know, and it was nice to have the theme tie into both the stories, like you said, from two different standpoints, right? You know, it's the stigma of being an ex-con, and, you know, despite you may having good intentions now, and you never would really hurt anybody anymore, there's still that stigma surrounding you. Like, you know, Allegra's friend was unable to get any sort of real job because of that stigma. And everyone was willing to just throw Yako under the bus because he was a metahuman. The you know, it lined up enough to be convenient to just throw him under the bus because he was an ex-con and he was a meta with fire powers. And so, like, it was really cool to kind of see, you know, hey, these are things that we need to take into consideration when we're dealing with this kind of stuff. And to see it from two different angles, from the metahuman side and from the human side, was really neat. And I appreciated that.
Okay, so I have to throw, like, one little mini gripe into this equation. All right, so Birch's whole power set is he gets mad, things get hot, right?
He absorbs heat.
Okay.
I think he, like, pulls it. I mean, they mention it in one sentence where he's like, he got so angry that they were trying to take his kid that he, like, pulled so much heat from the Earth's core that it melted magma underneath Central City. Like,
right. Okay. All right. So this is my point, though. He can get mad, and when he loses his temper, literally the city can be wiped out. Right.
Yeah, maybe he should be medicated.
I'm wondering, like, cure might be in order here. I'm just saying, man.
Mood stabilizers, man. Mood stabilizers.
Uh-huh. Well, if the mood stabilizers don't work, the city's destroyed. It does seem as though, you know, I don't know that he'd be getting his kid. That's all I'm saying. Is it, like, he seems like a very nice guy, a very caring father. He has a desire to do well. That's great. But he also has the ability to lose his temper and destroy the city. So I'm just saying.
But I mean, like, you know, if Flash ever decided to turn bad, he could kill everyone in the city in the blink of an eye. I mean, like, you know.
Yeah.
Why aren't we saying, oh, maybe we should cure Barry?
It didn't seem like he had Fair point. It's less about if he decided to destroy the city. I get the sense he doesn't want to destroy the city. But my point is, regardless of whether or not he wants to destroy the city, he almost did and didn't mean to. So it's more of that instability of his powers that I find to be a little concerned. If I was in charge of child services, I don't know that the kid would be going to Jack Black in this scenario.
But I mean, if we're willing to train other metahumans to harness and control their powers, why not train him to do the same thing? And so maybe his emotions would be less of a detriment.
I mean, maybe. Okay. All right. Maybe there needs to be some sort of, like, metahuman.
I'm just saying there's solutions other than, like, eugenics.
That's not what it is. All right. Here's another one. Maybe not the cure. We know the technology exists, Argus-wise, that they can put a little handcuff on you and suppress your powers. Maybe just handcuff him. You know?
I mean, that's still, like, he would have to voluntarily do it.
It's just a bracelet. Yeah, I mean, he almost destroyed the city. Okay, all right. I'm just saying, man.
Flash destroys the city in Armageddon, but he didn't because they fixed it.
Armageddon! All right. Well, fair enough. Regardless, man, we know that he's not the killer, but that killer is still out there. And I think we need to kind of spend a little time trying to figure that out. So we're going to take a quick break, and when we get back, we're going to jump into some speedster speculation.
Hi, this is John Wesley Shipp, and you're listening to Flash TV Talk. Red and yellow, red and yellow, red and yellow, red and yellow. Hold on. I'm on my red
and yellow. At Parker, our purpose is simple. We want to make the world a better place. By working more efficiently, by using more sustainable practices, by developing better technologies, we keep moving forward. With each new idea, innovation, and partnership, we're one step closer to fulfilling our purpose every single day. To find out more, visit parker.com/purpose. Parker, engineering your success.
This is the story of the one. As head of maintenance at a concert hall, he knows the show must always go on. That's why he works behind the scenes, ensuring every light is working, the HVAC is humming, and his facility shines. With Grainger's supplies and solutions for every challenge he faces, plus 24/7 customer support, his venue never misses a beat. Call quickgrainger.com or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
What's the easiest choice you can make? Window instead of middle seat? Picking a vendor who sends a great gift basket? Outsourcing business tasks you hate? What about selling with Shopify? Whether you're selling a little or a lot, Shopify helps you do your thing, however you cha-ching. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage to the first real-life store stage, all the way to the did-we-just-hit-a-million-orders stage, Shopify's there to help you grow. Whether you're selling scented soap or offering outdoor outfits, Shopify helps you sell. Wherever and whatever you're selling, Shopify's got you covered. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/try. Go to shopify.com/try now to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in. Shopify.com/try.
Speedster Speculation.
All right, man. Speedster Speculation this week. The killer is still at large. And we got a couple of clues. There's kind of a potentially big one, maybe? Or maybe this is like incomplete speculation, you know, tinfoil hat territory. But at the very end of the episode, we do see that, you know, Chester and Barry and I believe Frost are all kind of looking at the board, talking about what they need to scan for. And they realize they need to look for more victims because this killer is still on the loose. And they look over at the board, the glass board. And aside from pictures of all the various victims, we see in big letters, Cold Fusion. They talked specifically about how this, you know, power system or, you know, this attack worked and how it was kind of using Cold Fusion, that sort of thing. And so I thought it was worth noting, given the fact that they kind of drew up in big, bold letters the clue that we're supposed to walk away with, I started doing a little digging. And so I believe, and you can correct me if I'm wrong, but I believe on like a previous Legends of Tomorrow storyline, there was a doctor back in the 60s, or maybe before that, who was a inventor who basically invented Cold Fusion, but then Damian Dark like killed him, and then he didn't invent it in that particular timeline. Does that ring a bell at all?
Yeah, I'm trying to remember exactly what happened.
So this was Dr., and again, I'm about to butcher this, Bernhardt Vogel?
Yeah, Bernhardt Vogel, yeah.
Oh, I didn't butcher it?
No, you didn't. You did good.
All right, well, you know, so Vogel, Dr. Bernhardt Vogel. So in the original timeline, Damian Dark successfully killed Dr. Vogel and put an end to the Cold Fusion and saved the oil industry. But in the current timeline, Damian Dark tried to kill Vogel, but Ray Palmer and Nora Dark rescued him and escaped. The following day, Damian tried to kill Vogel again, but failed. Vogel was rescued by Damian's future version. Later, Damian kidnapped Nora and offered a trade, Nora, for Dr. Vogel. His future version agreed. Dark tricked him and threw Nora out of the roof, but not before he shot Vogel. Future Dark used his magic to catch Nora, and Damian tried to use the situation to his advantage. Dark shot his future self, but Future Dark caught the bullets with his magic. The two started fighting, yada, yada, yada. Dr. Vogel later died from his injuries, but not before he gave Ray Palmer all of his notes on Cold Fusion. So, is it possible that we're dealing with the ghost of Dr. Vogel?
No, we are clearly dealing with Nuclear Man.
The Molecular Man. Oh,
not Molecular. Molecular. Yeah. No, it's Nuclear Man from Superman 4, Quest for Peace.
Oh, interesting. The blonde guy?
Yeah. Who can grow his nails and he gets beat up on the moon.
I'm going to... I think my ghost of Dr. Vogel's better than that one, man. I'm not going to lie. Mine has actual connective tissue in the Arrowverse. I'm just saying. Like, yeah, it's there.
I feel like Dr. Vogel, it's not going to be Dr. Vogel because he's dead, but this was pre-crisis.
The ghost of Dr. Vogel is what I said. He's a heat ghost.
I don't think it's, but I don't know. I mean, like, the every time we saw, there's like this wispy, like, weird, you know, first person kind of view before everybody was killed, you know? Do you remember that? Like, where you can see, like, there's, like, fringe, like, I mean, ghost powers, I don't know. I mean, that's interesting. That's very interesting. I'm wondering, though, if it's someone, because Vogel gave Ray Palmer all of his notes on Cold Fusion, so I wonder if it's somebody connected to Palmer Tech. Who got this stuff?
Oh, okay. Interesting. Okay.
The ghost of Vogel would be pretty interesting, but I don't know about a ghost being a meta. Like,
that's a hardcore deep cut. Most of us are not going to know who that is.
Yeah. I would think it's somebody connected to Palmer Tech who found the technology, tried to do something with it, and wasn't quite up to the task, and ended up doing something to make themselves this heat-based meta.
Okay, so since we're dealing with kind of the nuclear and the fusion, maybe this could be Ronnie.
No.
Although
that would be an interesting twist for Caitlin's story with her new bow.
Yeah. Yeah. I don't love the idea of him coming back as a killer.
Yeah, I don't either.
I know that a lot of times we get that in, especially, you know, CW-esque shows, is that they, you know, a character dies and then, you know, we haven't seen the actor in forever and it's getting near the end of the series. So they bring him back, but it's like a dark or a twisted version of him or something like that.
What about Deathstorm?
I mean,
that has ties into like Blackest Night, and there's nothing else tying us into Blackest Night.
So what would be that? All right. First of all, very cool concept. Very cool concept. But why? Like, what's the... Are we going with more of a... Didn't they mention... I mean, like, all right, so it's been a while, and this has been kind of the challenge of these longer breaks. But if I'm remembering correctly, did they say that this back half was going to have more of a horror element to it? Or was that last season? Or the season before that?
I don't know. I don't recall hearing anything about that.
I feel like there was something, but maybe that was the whole thing with blood. Anyway, I don't know. Anyway, yeah, that would be cool if they had Deathstorm, a version of Deathstorm show up. There was also kind of talk of, you know, Scarlet Death, you know, which, you know, I guess if they were going to bring Deathstorm up, if they had some form or fashion, or even the Black Flash. Like, you've got these horror versions of characters we know that could make some sort of appearance. Yeah.
Yeah. And there's plenty of like dead metas to choose from. Like, I think what we could be seeing here is something of a red herring, where we're thinking that the heat meta is the main bad, but it's somebody else resurrecting dead metas and making them evil.
Interesting.
Or evil-er, you know. I think Deathstorm would be an interesting aspect to go to that because of the Caitlin side of it. I like, that would be really interesting to me to see her reaction to someone who's truly not Ronnie, but looks like him and is undead and evil or something like that. So we're not trying to like redeem him or bring him back, but she has to, like, because the thing is, like, the whole premise around last episode was her unable to let anybody in because of her, she's still kind of hurting about Ronnie. And so this would allow her to bring closure to that and fully let him go. Right. But the only real kink in that idea is, I don't know what kind of big bad you bring in to justify that and make it make sense.
Yeah, that's interesting. I mean, like, I really love the idea. I think that there's a lot of like larger concepts that are connected with that I really enjoy, and would be very cool. I just don't know. I do. If it is going to be connected to Firestorm, I would want it to be Deathstorm. So I like your idea. I like your idea better than I like my idea. I was just trying to mind the, you know. It's like Cold Fusion. Yeah. It's got to mean something. It's right there on the board.
I mean, you're not wrong. And like, there is definitely a pre-existing Arrowverse tie-in with that.
Right.
I'm trying to think of, you know, how do you resurrect Firestorm into Deathstorm without sort of having to go into the whole Blackest Night kind of thing? Like, who would be a meta or maybe even a magic user or something like that who resurrects people normally, and that's who we're gonna like have to deal with. I think it'd be really, really cool for Caitlin and her story. The rest of the team would be really interesting, and it would give us more of this sort of mystery. Is like, you know, we get a couple multi-episode stories with each of these, you know, meta serial killers, and like each one gives us a little bit more clues who's behind the resurrections or something.
All right, I got it. I know exactly who it is. It's Eobard Thawne. All right, no, hear me out. Hear me out. All right, so Eobard is trying to get Eddie back, and so he's made some sort of deal with the devil to like randomly bring back all of these undead characters from the past. So we get Ronnie back as Deathstorm, but then eventually we'll also get Eddie back as Blue McGillicuddy guy, Blue Lapis, the molecule. No, what was
Moleculo.
The guy?
You're talking about
Cobalt Blue. Cobalt Blue. Oh, you know, back in the day, I know I've referenced this before. Back in the day, I came up with this really, really fun concept for like a Cobalt Red storyline.
Yeah,
kind of bring that character back, but make him a Red Lantern would be really cool. Anyway, so who knows? Who knows what we'll end up getting? But I like the speculation. We want to hear what your speculation is. Send it into the show. You can write us flash@podastery.com. You can find our contact information as well as our YouTube channel, where you can tune in for our live podcast, which seems to be happening on Sundays. That seems to be the way that things are going, so that may be the new thing. Stay tuned to find out more, but the links to that can be available at tvtalk.fm. This podcast is made possible by our amazing Patreons at patreon.com/tvtalk. Thank y'all so much for supporting the show and keeping us on the air. Really enjoyed it. Look, we got a lot of TV to talk about here in the future, so don't go anywhere, because we'll be back in a flash.
This is the story of the one. As a maintenance engineer, he hears things differently. To the untrained ear, everything on his shop floor might sound fine, but he can hear gears grinding or a belt slipping. So he steps in to fix the problem at hand before it gets out of hand. And he knows Granger's got the right product he needs to get the job done, which is music to his ears. Call, click Granger.com, or just stop by. Granger, for the ones who get it done.